Jack Mangan. Amy Bowen.
Vanamon.
Smarty Hotties. Deadpan. Podcaster. Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Hey, welcome to Deadpan number 135. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. the guy who just got... Hey, welcome to Deadpan number 135. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. the guy who just got... Hey, welcome to Deadpan number 135. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. the guy who just got... Hey, welcome to Deadpan number 135. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. the guy who just got unstuck from a time loop. Although with that intro, the David Bowie intro, maybe I should actually just call myself a.k.a. Leper Messiah. And my deep appreciation for all of you guys who've contributed all kinds of content to the Deadpan, whether it be openings or whatever you send in, it's all appreciated. And my many thanks to Kurt, a.k.a. Dirt McGirt, for the Ziggy Stardust opening. I don't know if he was commenting on my Snow White, well-hung tan, but, anyway.
Donkus, 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 donkus.
And holy crap, you'll be here next week. Some of you will. You'll be here for Discworld Con and or for the Deadpan get-together. However, if you cannot make it, there will be the ability to attend by proxy. Well, there'll be Flash Gordon goodness and Discworld goodness and barbecue goodness, courtesy of the Love Long and Prosper folks, as well as party goodness. If you have any questions about any of this stuff, then send me an email. I'll give all the contact info at the end of the episode, if I remember. Okay, no more intro babble.
The Dollhouse Podcast is a fun, informal, and informative podcast about Joss Whedon's television series Dollhouse, where we discuss everything about the show. We talk about the actors.
When I see them playing this new character, I believe this is a new character.
We speculate about the implications of the imprinting technology.
It's like a videotape. You can erase and record it. But if you keep doing that, it breaks down. Is the human brain kind of like that? You know, if you keep overwriting it.
And of course, we're chock full of tangents.
If I die, I'm going to be wedged.
Oh, who do you want to be imprinted on?
Somebody really hot.
So get active and tune in to the Dollhouse Podcast at thedollhousepodcast.com.
Hey, this is Mike Nelson, and you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Keep it tuned here.
Sunday, more panels, then the Hugos. The Hugos were fun. Neil Gaiman won, which nobody was surprised. Sat with some friends of ours, and we played Hugo Bingo, which is you take the Hugo list of nominees, and you rank them 1 through 5 or 6, depending on how many nominees are, 1 being the one you think would win the most, and 5 being the one the least. And then when the winner is chosen, you circle the number associated with it. You add up the numbers. Lowest score wins. I lost again. This seemed to be the trend at Worldcon. Out of a potential score, low score of 16, I had 42, which is not very good. Husband came in second last at 34, but hey, what are you going to do? It was still fun. It was quite fun. Again, room by midnight-ish. Really, the party rooms were so crowded. It was insane, and you couldn't even breathe. Monday, more standing in line to get an autograph. They all combined, you end up standing in line to get a ticket to get an autograph, and you were there about an hour, and then you lined up about an hour before the actual autographing session, if you had a ticket, to get the autograph. So about 2 hours of standing in line. It was rather silly, but like I said, there wasn't really much of a better way to do it. A couple of more panels, and then closing ceremonies. And then we went off to the airport to go home. So, a few thoughts. First of all, it was the first time I was at Montreal, and it was so cool. They had an underground city. I don't know if they called it an underground city, but that's what I called it. Basically, you would go down to the metro area, but underneath there were a series of tunnels, and they were all interconnected with malls and food courts, and it was all underground, and it was way cool. We could go from the convention center to our hotel strictly going through the underground city, the tunnels and the offices and the food courts, etc. And it was really cool. There's some areas, there was one area, I guess technically it wasn't part of the underground city, but it was all part of the interconnected inner sanctum workings. But there was this fountain. It was amazing. It was basically a giant black table, water table. It was 30 feet by 15 or something like that. And you almost couldn't tell that there was water flowing over it until you went up and got close and touched it. It was quite amazing.
Hi, this is Paul. Too much emotion. Wow. Hi. Hi. This is Paul Mackey, author of the Really Big Things serial, and you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan.
All right, so coming up in this episode, we have a new Questers from FPM from Amy Bowen. And this one certainly has some surprise appearances and hints at even more. However, in this episode, we're actually going to have two pieces of fiction. Yes, two. This episode is actually going to feature a short story of mine called Nowhere in Jersey is Safe. And elements of this story have been around for really some of my earliest writing work, actually. So this it's come a long way. Anyway, enough about that. It is an updated story for 2009 and actually never been released anywhere else. It's going to be out here. First place you'll hear it is here in the Deadpan. The first part will be released right here in this episode, and the conclusion will be in the next release, whether it be Unshow or full-length Deadpan, whatever comes out next week. And Amy, I certainly hope you don't feel like I'm stepping on your toes, but, you know, there's room in the Deadpan podcast for two pieces of fiction. In fact, we've done that before. So, without further ado, the first part of Nowhere in Jersey is Safe, followed by the next episode in the Questers from FPM serial. Nowhere in Jersey is Safe. By me, read by me, yeah. All right. So I'm safe then? It was the first cause for optimism when it felt in days. You're not safe at all. You should drive to Mexico City and disappear. He wasn't joking. A cigarette dangling from his lip, he peeled a nicotine patch and adhered it to his bicep. The light up ahead turned to amber. He slowed to a stop as it proceeded to red. Jesus, it's that bad, she said. He nodded. The car's vents circulated heat against the cold outside. I'm sorry. The things I did for you will keep you alive as far as Mexico. But you're really going to have to become invisible for a while. Gandolfini's boys have the combined ruthlessness of wise guys and religious radicals. Mexico City is the perfect terminus for someone who wants to vanish. Go there, stay there for a year, then get on a plane for someplace on another continent. In 3 years, move again. Just don't come back to the U.S. for at least 10 years. The crime you took part in is bigger and more sinister than Enron. You're not going to hear or see anything about this on the news. You may have known about all those corpo political contributions, but you probably had no idea about your company's mob links. I didn't until 4 days ago. He stubbed out his cigarette on his denim knee and took a piece of gum. Nicorette? She shook her head. He grimaced and chewed, then went on. What do you know about the Gandolfinis? Nothing. They're a weird fucking bunch. Part mafia splinter group, part religious cult. The Gandolfinis are creating this fervent religious dogma surrounding the Jersey Shore, their Catholic faith, and their mob business. You know, the guy who called and threatened me said something about being led to the sea. I know. Ever read Big Sur by Jack Kerouac? They're big on the whole everything dies and goes to the ocean thing. I'm telling you, the gaffer and his followers have their own unique way of doing things. The two of them sat quietly for a minute. Skeletal, wintry trees watched their passage through the suburban side streets. He said, "So how does this affect you? Well, you stole money from them, and they don't care that you did it unwittingly. Your name, face, favorite color, and all your personal details are embedded in the brains of every hitman in the tri-state area. I've hacked into the Gandolfini's database and added a bunch of false info to deter them, saying that somebody already got to you, that you're dead already. Hopefully somebody will check the site soon and start spreading word that you've already been taken out, and hopefully they'll believe it." Gullis blew a pathetic little bubble with his nicotine gum. He stopped chewing long enough to light up a new cigarette. He pulled the car into a shallow cul-de-sac, stopping to idle before the last driveway on the left. The house was an affluent, Lloyd Wrightian slab of spotless white, with large tinted windows looking out onto a narrow chem-lawn yard. "You'll need to avoid airports for a few months," Gola said. "There's a Lexus in the garage here. Take it for the first leg of your journey. But you'd probably better ditch it before you hit the border." Wen had dammed up all the feelings she could manage for the 3 days since his arrival, but felt her emotions beginning to leak through. Gullis pretended not to notice. He reached into the back seat and pulled a worn duffel bag into his lap. He dug into it and produced a wallet full of credit cards, some bearing her picture. "Use one of these cards to buy a replacement vehicle. There's also a paper in here with numbers to call in case you need anything. I know I'm a cool guy, but you'll be placing us both in serious danger if you go looking for me. Call those numbers if there's an emergency. But use payphones if you can find them. Wait a year or so to get a cell phone. Why don't you just come with me, Gullis? Get yourself out of this dangerous business and go to Mexico City with me." He kept his eyes on the dashboard. The agency needs me here, Wen. If you need me specifically, call the numbers. They'll tell me and I'll find you." He dug again into the bag and pulled out a black handgun. "I can guarantee that this house is safe, at least for tonight. Just in case, though," he said, and tucked the gun and paper back into the bag. He zipped it up and slid it into her lap. "Just don't stay here more than a few days. The Gandolfinis will find this place soon enough. Don't be here when they show up." She nodded. "I think that's everything. If you have any trouble at all, then call one of the numbers on that paper, okay? Where will you go from here?" He offered her a smile. "Not Mexico City, where you're headed. Good luck, Wen." "Thank you for everything, Gullis." Feeling awkward, she leaned across, kissed him on the cheek. The combined fragrance of cigarettes and aftershave on his scratchy face reminded her of her father. She dismissed that and kissed him again. And again until her mouth met his. After a moment, his lips parted and their tongues connected. She emerged from the kiss after long seconds and held her face next to his. "Where will you be?" she whispered. "New Jersey," he breathed. "Come inside with me," she said softly. "I need you to keep me safe." "I can't," he said. "God, I can't. I'm your only decoy. If I stay, then the Gandolfinis will find you tonight. I have to lead them in the wrong direction." "I'm sorry." She nodded again. "I know." "Don't you show up in Jersey, Wen. That's the Gandolfini's home turf. It's too dangerous. Promise me you'll leave the country." She said nothing, but kissed him again and got out of the car. Gun in trembling hands, she stalked through every inch of every room in the house, locking doors and windows as she went, making certain that she was alone. The first time she passed the front windows, Golis's BMW was still in front of the house. The second time she looked, he was gone. Finally, she collapsed on the bed upstairs, clicking the gun safety back on. As scared as she felt, she was unconscious in minutes. She woke to a hand on her bare thigh. Wen sat quickly upright, instantly awake, clutching the handgun. Her eyes focused in the darkness and saw that she'd stuck the pistol into Golis's face. He pushed it aside and moved onto the bed toward her.
"You are listening to Jack Mason's Deadpan. We are Deadpan. Deadpan is the way."
The Questers from FBM. A serial. by Amy Bowen. Episode 7, The Home for Infinite Winners.
How far are we from the place we're going, Rhea?
Ed asked as his party walked down the road. Here, beyond the Centaur Court, the gravel road once again ran through the glossy black plain they had seen before. Here and there, small houses and way stations dotted the landscape.
Not very far, said Rhea. We should be there in about 45 minutes.
Where exactly are we going, anyway?
Asked Jeremy.
We're going to a place called the Home for Infinite Winners. That's where our friend Chris went.
So she's an infinite winner? What does that mean?
Yep, she is. It means she's a good person with good ideas. You see, the mind of the cosmos likes to collect knowledge, wisdom, beauty, and things like that in specific gathering places. The House of Sophia Pulchra is one of those places. So are all the places in the living world where witches and wizards build their guild halls. So is the Home for Infinite Winners. It's where the best and brightest people go when they die. Not just so that they can contribute their own knowledge to the local pool, but so that they can interact with each other to create new knowledge for the mind of the cosmos to analyze and enjoy.
So is Chris being rewarded there? Asked Amy.
Yes. She gets to hang out with other smart and creative people, and they never have any worries at all.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. She really deserves it. As the party walked, they reminisced about their friend Chris and tried to guess what kind of wisdom she would have to share with them when they finally saw her. After a while, their destination came into view. The Home for Infinite Winners was a grand white and gold castle with many windows, from which warm light glowed in many colors. Unlike most castles, though, this one was circular instead of square. 8 towers were spaced evenly around the circle. There was no moat, but there was a portcullis in the grand main entrance, with a guard standing outside it. The guard was a woman, wearing feminine but intimidating black leather body armor with a black cape. She carried a strange weapon, a long wooden staff with a sharp blade on the end. Good day, ma'am.
Good day to you. I am Jessica, the leather clad mistress of the underworld. Who are you? Your voice sounds familiar for some reason.
So does yours. I can't imagine why. I am Amy Bowen, Chief Ambassador of FPM, and these are my traveling companions. We have come here on a quest to find a recently deceased associate of ours, Kristen Mayo, and talk to her to learn what she knew about socializing and negotiating with Podangans. Without her knowledge, FPM's alliance with Podango is in danger of falling apart. We believe she is here.
She is.
May we go in and see her, please?
I need to know a little more about the situation first.
All right.
Did Kristen die wrongfully?
Yes. She was assassinated by dissenters from within her own country. People who want us to give up on the alliance with Podango entirely.
Do you believe you could salvage the alliance if you only had her knowledge?
Yes, I do. I was the second-ranked ambassador of the court after her, and now I'm the first.
Was she your friend?
Yes, she was a very dear friend.
Very well, you and your rabbit may enter. The others will have to wait here.
What? Why?
The mind of the cosmos has set forth very clear rules for how the Home for Infinite Winners is to operate. And it put me here to enforce those rules. Inside, the home is divided into halves, one for women and one for men. When a new resident first comes here, he or she must remain isolated for a few days, so that the cosmic mind can collect his or her individual knowledge and expertise, and analyze and understand its unique nature. After that, the new resident gets to mingle, but only with others of the same gender. The knowledge created by that mingling is collected and analyzed in the same way. After all the possibilities that arise from that mingling have been explored, he or she is allowed to mingle with members of the opposite gender. Your friend Kristen is currently in the second phase of the process, so I can only let other women in to see her. Other females, I mean.
Jessica nodded to Rhea.
We can't just wait here,
protested Joe.
Aren't you gentlemen serving as bodyguards?
Yes.
There's really no need for you to go inside. This is a place of rest and reward. There's nothing here for you to protect your friends from.
That's not the point. We all came along because we wanted to see her. We've been looking forward to it the whole time we've been on this quest.
That's right.
Agreed, Wanderwolf.
We were all her friends, and we miss her.
Yes, we do. And besides that, I'm a bard. I came along to record the events of this quest and write a great ballad about them. How can I do that if I miss the moment the entire journey has been building up to?
I'm sorry, but the rules are the rules.
Forget this. Come on, everybody. If we can't all go in together, we won't go in at all.
John stomped off around the side of the castle. You have been listening to The Questers from FBM, a serial by Amy Bowen. Thanks to Ed from Texas, Rhea Dynas, Chris Kolish, Jessica Shiro, Justin Joe, Jack Hosley, and Paul Mackey for contributing their voices to this episode. The music heard in this episode was Journey's End by Guardian Mind Mix, available at Music Alley, formerly known as the PodSafe Music Network.
Hey, all you crazy sons of bitches. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. God help your soul.
And they even had, and this I found quite strange, there was a piece of the Berlin Wall. So you go to Montreal to see the Berlin Wall. It was just, it was funny, but I see that. Another little anecdote is there's a little convenience store in the convention center, and a bunch of us are standing there getting, you know, pop chips, da-da-da-da-da. And some local, and I'm not sure, I think he was actually trying to get our goats and whatnot. But anyways, there's a local there wanting to know what it was all about, because he saw name tags and just said it's sci-fi convention, da-da-da. And he goes, oh, cool, is Gary Gygax there? Whole lineup in unison, he's dead. And he's like, oh, well, is Steve Jackson there? So we all went, no, this is not a gaming convention. It has more literary bent, da-da-da. And so he says, so who is there? And we went, Neil Gaiman. And he goes, who's that? And that's why I was wondering if maybe he's just getting our goat. But I thought it was interesting he's naming these gaming people as opposed to authors and whatnot. So that was a little bit of funniness there. And also, the Montreal airport is insanely busy. Montreal has, you know, 2 or 3 times more people than Calgary. And its airport is half the size, so you can hardly move. It was just lineups everywhere. I just could not believe it. It was just, I don't think I've been in an airport so small for a city so big. But the one thing I will say about the airport, and everywhere we went, is everything is kept very clean. I was commenting to my husband in the convention center, in the airport, there was no graffiti on the bathroom stalls. And I know that sounds like a silly thing to comment on, but I don't think I've ever been into a public restroom where someone hasn't tried to write or scrape or whatever on the bathroom stalls, some silly nonsense. And there was nothing in any of them. And in the airport or even the convention center, which is right on the metro line, to me, that was really, really surprising.
Why, sure. Why, climb sure. Into my spoon. Into my spoon.
Although, actually, this week we got a bunch of YouTube commenters to give their thoughts on Deadpan. LatexBanana777 says, "This sucks Dockney balls." Smiley face. BostonCreamer69 says, "This is the gay set fucking thing I ever wasted a half hour on. Anyone who likes it is a homo." Lady Gag Poke My Face 82 says, "What is your point, Latex Banana? By stating that Deadpan sucks Dockney balls, you indicate that you do not enjoy the podcast, but you do not back up your comments with any solid examples. To what in this presentation did you object? Anyone can sit behind their computer and criticize. What kind of podcasting have you ever done? Can you do something like this week in and week out?" Actually, there were 8,400 more characters, but we've abridged them. Millennium Bori says, "I like this to be the good very like at so much! Jack's Man Pan of the Dead is excellent. Sorry for my English is not good, okay? I am very happy, just this much potato cheese, lots of exclamation points. Vanamon says, cough. Big Arge Baboon Behind, 2012, says, shut up, Melon Bori, you're a fag, ha 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 ha. Dimitri Azrael Malachi Belial Steve 16 says, LOL, My Chemical Romance is so deep, much better than this, you guys, OMG, LOL. Macro Cosby 21678 says, that's so American to talk about the contents of your fridge. This is bad because you're a stupid American. Sally Brown 333 says, hey guys, come see my pics at slutswithketchup.com. Thanks, XOXO. Dumbass memories.
Okay, here's a dumbass memory from me. About 3.5 years ago, I started truck driving, and I didn't have a GPS unit, and I was very new to driving, and I hadn't really even been out of the state of Ohio that much, driving on my own. They sent me all over the place. They sent me up to New England. They sent me down south. They sent me over to Detroit, and I got lost on every single delivery I had to make, just having to make illegal U-turns left and right, and I knew if I got caught doing one of those, I'd be fired instantly, and I was just having the worst time, and I was doubting myself, doubting everything I could possibly do, and I was just freaking out, and I'm driving home on my first week, just late, behind, and everything, and I tune in my XM station, my XM radio over to the truck driving station, and they start playing this Red Sovin, I think that's how you pronounce his name, song, Phantom 309. Now, if you're not familiar with the story, it was parodied on Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but anyway, it's about a hitchhiker that gets picked up by a truck driver named Big Joe. He's down on his luck, and Big Joe and his truck pick him up and drive him, and they sit around chatting and stuff, and then the guy says, oh, wait a minute, I gotta stop over at this truck stop, and you gotta get out, because I have to make this turn, and you can't come along with me. Oh, but here's a quarter, and go buy a cup of coffee, and tell him Big Joe sent you. So, predictably, he walks in, tells him, hey, got a cup of coffee, and this truck driver named Big Joe told me to say hi. Everyone looks at him, goes, yeah. Well, this happens every now and then. Big Joe comes by and picks somebody up, but you have to understand, 10 years ago, at that crossroads where Big Joe picked you up, he swerved to avoid hitting a school bus full of kids, lost control of his truck, and wiped out. So you enjoy your cup of coffee and keep that souvenir from Big Joe and his truck 309. Now, as I'm listening to this hokey, corny, highly predictable song from 1970-something, tears start pouring down my face. And I'm literally looking around in my cab, red-faced and embarrassed, because I'm having this huge cathartic moment as a just like, I don't know, it was like some kind of weird epiphany and stuff, and I just start wiping my eyes wherever, going, oh God, hopefully no one can see me crying my eyes out listening to this horrible, horrible, predictable country song about a ghost, and now I'm just this blubbering schoolgirl. So there's my dumbass memory.
Okay, yes, Twitter is a worldwide phenomenon. Its runaway Twain success is tremendous. Hundreds of Twerd Party Twitter applications have been created all over the worldwide web. It's changed the way we talk, tweemail, and even conduct business-to-business transactions. Great. But for the love of the Holy Trinity, can we please swap adding a TW sound to the beginning of every word used in conjunction of Twitter? Tweezus Christ. It was too amusing at first, but now it twaint. It's gotten twold. So by all means, develop, QA twist, and retweet your new program to enhance user experience on this twendy new tool that's twinking the current high-twec world. Or to invent a social construct or practice that utilizes the communicative power. Just keep the twa out of the name. Eat your other Twix bar and think of a better name. Does Facebook start all of its fad-on fabrications with an F? Okay, I'm tired of this topic. Time for the real greasy twipples.
Why, sure! Why, climb sure. Into my...
Yeah. The first one of the week was Vanamon. He says, Wong. Now for the actual grease. The Energizer Bunny says, cool, I've been referenced. http://en.wikipedia.org/wiki/Leo and Diane Dillon. The Energizer Bunny says, are we talking Britney Spears and Madonna or something a little more ellipsis friendly? Ditto says, it's funny how many men make the dishwasher mistake. It's one I've never really understood. Ask a guy if he'd use olive oil in the engine of his car, and he'd tell you not to be stupid. If oils aren't interchangeable, why should soap be? Still, I can see that if someone is in a hurry and not really thinking about what they are doing, ellipsis, dot. Besides, I've made plenty of dumb mistakes myself, so I shouldn't be too critical. Imaginary Number says, Nomad Scry. Yes, please feel free to mock my antics. I should get some Benny Hill-esque music while I do housework. Retro says, did I ever tell the story about star John Delancey star stealing $30 from me? I've been on this board for 3 years. Surely I must have. LOL. Wanderwolf says, I am not fluffy enough.
This is Dr. Zoidberg. You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
Alright, so I lied. Yeah, that's good podcast listening right there. The second half of the first half of the Nowhere in Jersey is Safe recording will actually not go out in this episode, because this episode is already long enough. Wouldn't you agree? Yes. So the second half of the first half will go out in the next release, whenever that may be, and then maybe the entirety of the second half will accompany it. Or maybe it will be your input, maybe it will be your contributions. That remains to be seen. You can email me recordings of your favorite dumbass memories, your favorite stolen song lyrics, your favorite story about a song that was meaningful to you. And actually, I have a contribution of that from Imaginary Number. Thank you very much, Imaginary. And apologies, actually, for not running that or the contents of your fridge in this episode. You'll hear those very soon, and very soon in an upcoming episode. And so for everyone else who has stuff waiting, that will be played as well. And if you are thinking about sending something, then please do to accompany Imaginary Number and me, because we'll be lonely together. And before this gets any weirder, just send me stuff. The email is sphericaljackm@gmail.com, or the voicemail line is 206-350-8664, 206-350-TOMY. And you can also, I would recommend emailing me at sphericaljackm@gmail.com. Email address. If you have any questions about the Labor Day Deadpan M get together, you are still welcome to attend. You are still welcome to contact either CJ or Rhea, aka the Energizer Bunny. And you can also find that at the Deadpan Facebook page. I guess that's it. This has gone way too long. Thank you for listening. Deadpan is a lot of fun and a great community, and I know it sounded like I was just reciting that right there, but I truly mean it. I truly value all of the great friendships and relationships we've got here. And I look forward to seeing some of you again, and to meeting some of you, who I feel like I know pretty well, but I look forward to meeting you face-to-face for the first time. And when it's all done, I do look forward to hearing Amy Bone's next travel update. And of course, I do have another travel update of hers that this episode was just too fat. So it will go into the next episode. All right, I'm going to end this fat episode. Finally. Yes, that's it. No more talking. Deadpan.
Owns the man, and those that bought the farm, those that run the scam in the news. When the new land hits, we'll all see this division splits. All my love kicks and kicks. then ripped, and then broke into the new. Oh, in the new. Run through. Well, I know your garden's full, yet I see myself and you in the new. Do all I can do. Each moment struggles through. I'm hard, then ripped, and then broke into the new.